Oh, it's up there already. Good. At the end of chapter 2, we were looking at verses 27 to 36. When an unnamed man tells Eli there in verse 29, he has accountability for his sons. As a result, his descendants would not live to an old age. The tabernacle would be distressed, which I think points to the capture of the tabernacle and the removal by the Philistines from Shiloh. And as a sign, his sons would die on the same day. As we got down to verses 35 and 36, but when it talks about, I'll raise up a faithful priest who will do according to what is in my heart and in my soul, I will build him an enduring house, and so on. You know, maybe this refers to Samuel to a certain point, but perhaps more so to even Solomon. But I think ultimately, the fulfillment of these words and these verses have their fulfillment in the Messiah. Acts 6 tells us that the priest would eventually obey the gospel, and that's what did happen. And again, I told you on Sunday morning, there are some of these verses more challenging than others. Anything you'd like to say through verse 36 of the second chapter? Then in the third chapter, now the boy Samuel was ministering to the Lord before Eli, and word from the Lord was rare in those days. Visions were infrequent. Samuel is now working under the direction of Eli, whose eyesight is dimmed. Those of us who have had cataract surgery, and I'm convinced there's more than one of us in here that have had that, understand the cloudiness that age brings to our vision. And it makes it harder to see. My surgery was in July and August, and one of my reactions was everything was brighter afterwards. And in particular, the cars at night are a lot brighter. So here we have very old and blind Eli, who's laid down to sleep. And so Samuel, only the fading light of a lamp is available within the holy place to give any light. And Samuel is trying to sleep. Three times in the darkness, the Lord called Samuel. And Samuel answers, "Here am I." And he goes to Eli each time and says, "What did you want?" And Eli says, "I didn't call you." Verse 7 says, the reason Samuel did not know the Lord was speaking to him is that he had not had any personal revelation from God at this point. After the third time, Eli understands that God is calling Samuel and tells Samuel how to respond to God by saying, "Speak, Lord, for your servant is listening." So now, there at the end of verse 9, Samuel went and lay down in his place. So in verse 10, then the Lord came and stood and called, as at other times, "Samuel, Samuel." And Samuel said, "Speak, for your servant is listening," just like Eli told him to do. So four times he's been called. This time he responds. God tells Samuel the iniquity of Eli's sons is going to be dealt with because his sons brought a curse on themselves, and he, Eli, did not rebuke them. The family of Eli are going to suffer this divine judgment because those sons are contemptible. They're corrupt. Eli did not have the ability to gain their attention and turn them back to the Lord. So, as we look at these verses, let's go to verse 15. So Samuel lay down until the morning. Then he opened the doors of the house of the Lord. But Samuel was afraid to tell the vision to Eli. He's naturally reluctant to tell Eli the sobering, serious things that God has said to him. Finally, Eli says to him, "What is the word that he spoke to you? Please do not hide it from me. May God do so to you and more also if you hide anything from me of all the words that he spoke to you." So that's a pretty strong statement by Eli to Samuel. And Samuel told him everything at that point. Pretty tough for a parent to hear. But then Eli says, "It is the Lord. Let him do what seems good to him." He resigns himself to accept God's verdict because he knows God only does what's right. In verse 19, Samuel grew, and the Lord was with him, and let none of his words fail. All Israel, from Dan even to Beersheba, knew that Samuel was confirmed as a prophet of the Lord. And the Lord appeared again at Shiloh because the Lord revealed himself to Samuel at Shiloh by the word of the Lord. And then, as the fourth chapter, it begins only, "Thus the word of Samuel came to all of Israel." As you see in this passage, Samuel was growing physically. He was aging. He was growing spiritually. When it says the Lord was with him and let none of his words fail, we see that the Lord made sure that any prophecies Samuel spoke were fulfilled. And that confirms him as a prophet. It gives him validity. That shows the people that the Lord is with him. The people of Israel, from Dan to Beersheba, from the north to the south, in other words, understood that Samuel was a prophet. Just as a quick note, the function of a prophet was to serve as God's spokesman. They spoke primarily to the people of their own day and their own time. And we often see them, as we read the Old Testament, speak in times of spiritual and moral repression and decay when God raised them up to try to turn the people back to God. And certainly, as we've studied so far in our study of the Judges, the people needed to turn back to God. Any comments through these very first verses of our study? Okay. In chapter 4, as it begins, "Thus the word of Samuel came to all Israel. Now Israel went out to meet the Philistines in battle and camped beside Ebenezer while the Philistines camped in Aphek." As you look at that, you can see on a map that Aphek is up toward the high end of the land of the Philistines. It's west of Shiloh. Then in later verses on the map, we're going to see that it refers to Ashdod, which is over toward the almost to the coast. You see the dotted straight line that goes from Shiloh to Ashdod, a distance of maybe 50 miles to the southwest. And then on the second map, we see Ebenezer is a short distance to the northeast of Aphek, and that's where the Philistines were camped. You'll remember we sing about raising our Ebenezer in a song, "O the fount of every blessing." As far as our study goes, Ebenezer was a place east of Aphek, and it was also later in our studies the name that Samuel gives a stone he set up to perpetuate the victory that the Israelites had over the Philistines in the 7th chapter. So as we go back to the 4th chapter and looking there at verse 1, we see that the Israelites camped at Ebenezer and the Philistines camped in Aphek. Sadly, Israel is defeated. The Philistines kill about 4,000 men on the battlefield. That's not lighthearted. I mean, any death of a person is serious. 4,000 men. And as we look at that, in verse 3, the elders believed God gave the Philistines to the victory because they had not brought the Ark of the Covenant to the battle site. So they sent for the Ark of the Covenant to be brought to them from Shiloh. Now, perhaps the people of Israel thought having the Ark at the battle would guarantee that the Lord would be present with them and would give them a victory. Verse 4 also says, the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, were there with the Ark of the Covenant. Beginning in verses 5 through 9, when the Ark arrived, the Israelites shouted real loud, and it scared the Philistines because they believed the presence of the Ark meant that God would be with the Israelites. Verse 6 calls the Israelites Hebrews. That's the first use of the word Hebrew, or the first use of the word Hebrew was in Genesis 14th chapter, verse 13. Abram the Hebrew is mentioned. And Abram was a descendant of Eber, who was a descendant of Shem, and so on. Verse 8 says, these pagan Philistines thought the Israelites had many gods, like the Philistines did. And it was the Israelite gods that defeated the Egyptians using a lot of different plagues. Look at that. Woe to us. Who shall deliver us from the hand of these mighty gods? These are the gods, plural, who smote the Egyptians with all kinds of plagues in the wilderness. So in verse 9, they encourage one another, these Philistines do, to be men, stand up, be powerful, fight hard. So in the verses 10 and 11, the Philistines fought. Israel was defeated. Every man fled to his tent. The slaughter was great. There fell of Israel 30,000 foot soldiers. 4,000 had already been killed in the first battle. 30,000 are killed now. And the Ark of God was taken. Then in the fulfillment of prophecy, verse 11 ends, and the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, died. And you'll remember the prophecy that had been received said they would die on the same day. What would you like to say through verse 11? It was as if you consider the ark basically a box, it's as if they thought God was inside the box. So they were seriously mistaken. In verse 12 and following to verse 18, the battle has occurred. 30,000 men have lost their lives in this second battle. A messenger from the battlefield covered the 18 miles to Shiloh very quickly and trying to bring news of the battle. Eli was waiting to hear the news. And when he hears the news, this 98-year-old man is sitting on his seat by the road, trying to be very attentive. He wants to know what's going on. So in verse 14, he hears a noise. He cries out, "What does the noise of this commotion mean?" And this messenger, a man of Benjamin, comes hurriedly to Eli. And it says in 15, Eli was 98 years old and his eyes were set so that he could not see. Remember, we've already said his eyes were dimming. The man in 16 says to Eli, "I am the one who came from the battle line. Indeed, I escaped from the battle today." And Eli says, "How did things go, my son?" Well, they didn't go well, did they? Israel has fled before the Philistines, and there has also been a great slaughter among the people. And your two sons also, Hophni and Phinehas, are dead, and the Ark of God has been taken. When he mentioned the Ark of God, Eli fell off the seat backward beside the gate, and his neck was broken, and he died, for he was old and heavy. Thus he judged Israel 40 years. You know, we all have, excuse me, I made a generality. As some of us, namely Larry, age, we have a tendency to become less capable. And Eli fell backwards. His neck was broken. He was old and heavy. He had judged Israel 40 years. The news was just overwhelming. But not only was he overwhelmed, when you look at the next verses, 19 through 22, his daughter-in-law, Phinehas' wife, was pregnant and about to give birth. When she heard the news, the trauma of the day hastened her labor, and she birthed a son named Ichabod, which means the glory has departed from Israel. Verse 21, and she called the boy Ichabod, saying, the glory has departed from Israel because the ark of God was taken and because her father-in-law and her husband. They both died, didn't they? She said, the glory has departed from Israel, for the ark was taken. Perhaps those are some of her last words. So not just Eli died, not just the 30,000 died. There's further effect of the battle. As we go into the fifth chapter, in those first five verses, while the Israelites have been defeated twice on the field of battle, a different confrontation now takes place. The Philistines have taken the Ark of the Covenant to Ashdod. They place it in the temple of Dagon, the national god of the Philistines. Common images of Dagon show a bearded man for the upper body and a lower body resembling the body of a fish. When the people came into the temple the next morning, they found that their Dagon statue flat on his face before the Ark of the Lord. They set it back up. And the next morning, the same thing had happened. Plus, the head of Dagon and the palms of his hands were cut off. Dagon was reduced to a stump without a head for thinking or hands for acting. The Philistines would no longer enter that area. The main point here is God defeated Dagon in his very own temple. Verse 5, neither the priest of Dagon nor all who enter Dagon's house tread on the threshold of Dagon in Ashdod to this day. So, as you look at verse 6, the hand of the Lord was heavy on the Ashdodites, and he ravaged them and smote them with tumors, both Ashdod and its territories. When the men of Ashdod saw that it was so, they said, the ark of the God of Israel must not remain with us, for his hand is severe on us and on Dagon our God. Not only did God destroy that pagan statue, God ravaged them, which implies the destruction of their crops, and God struck the people with severe tumors that were very painful. This convinced the men of Ashdod that this ark of God needed to be moved. They assembled the leaders of the Philistines, sent the ark to Gath, where God then struck the men of the city, young and old, with tumors. And that was in verse 8. So then they sent, in verse 10, the ark of God to Ekron, another one of the leading Philistine cities. The people of Ekron did not want the ark in their city, believing its presence would lead to their death. And again, the Philistine leaders came together and pleaded for the ark to be sent back to Israel. While this was happening, verse 12, and the men who did not die were smitten with tumors, and the cry of the city went up to heaven. They were right. There was going in each of these cities, Ashdod and Gath and Ekron, there's a consequence to having the Lord's Ark of the Covenant in the city, and it's a very painful consequence with tumors that are smiting the men. And from verse 12, the men who did not die, it looks like there was a pretty strong consequence for some of them. So as we go in, well, let me stop. Any comments to there? So as we go into the sixth chapter now, the ark of the Lord had been in the country of the Philistines 7 months. Well, it took them a little bit of time to move that ark around, didn't it? And to understand there's a consequence to having it. So after 7 months of painful consequences related to having the ark, these Philistines prepared to send the ark back to the Israel. Their priests and pagan diviners say a guilt offering of 5 golden tumors representing the disease that struck the people and the 5 golden mice representing the rodents that had savaged and ravaged their crops should be prepared. And the number 5 also represents the 5 lords of the 5 major cities of the Philistines. And those 5 tumors and 5 mice represented a guilt offering that should be made and sent with the ark when it's returned to Israel. So, as we look at this, in verse 1 of the 6th chapter, we see 7 months have gone by. Consequences are happening. They're suffering from all that has occurred. In verse 6 of this 6th chapter, we can see what happened in Egypt was well known. Exodus 15:14 through 19 says the people of Philistia, Edom, Moab, and Canaan had heard of God's support for the Israelites when they left Egypt. In Joshua 2:10 through 11, Rahab says her people have heard of the Israelites. Exodus 9 verse 34 says Pharaoh hardened his own heart, and these Philistines do not want to harden their own hearts and be like the Egyptians who God had treated so harshly. So, yeah, news had spread about how God took care of the Israelites. So in verse 6, why then do you harden your hearts as the Egyptians and the Pharaoh hardened their hearts when God had severely dealt with them? Did not they allow the people to go and they departed? So in the following verses, as you get here to the 7th through the 9th verses, the advice is to build a cart and hitch 2 cows to it. These cows had not done any secular work. They hadn't had a yoke on them or anything. And they want these cows placed with the Ark of the Covenant. New cart, cows that had not been worked before. And put the Ark of the Covenant on the cart. And also put the gold tumors, the 5 gold timbers, the 5 mice representing the 5 major cities. And send the cart and the cows on the way on the road to the nearest Israelite town of Beth Shemesh. Located about 10 miles east of Ekron. If the cows did not go back to their herd, then and went on to Beth Shemesh with the Philistines following them, they would assume that that meant that it was the God of the Israelites who had punished the Philistines. But if the cow stayed with the Philistines, maybe the God of Israel hadn't punished them. So they and maybe they chose just cows, because if there was a herd and these were young cows, maybe they wanted to return to the herd. But what do we see happen? In verse 9, watch. If it goes up by the way of its own territory to Beth Shemesh, then he, God, has done us this great evil. So then, in verses 10 through 12, the Philistines took the advice of their diviners and priests and did what was suggested. They built the cart, put the ark on it, hitched the cows, and the cows went to Beth Shemesh, with the Philistines following them until they were near Beth Shemesh to see what was going to happen. In verses 13 through 16, the cart arrives at Beth Shemesh, a priestly city in the tribe of Dan on the northern boundary of Judah, where the farmers are reaping wheat. This would suggest maybe early summer, June, July. You know, wheat, it seems like Linda and I are never in town when the wheat and grain crops are harvested here in the last half of June. So the cows stopped near a large stone in the field of Joshua. The Levites removed the ark and placed it on a large stone. A fire was built with the wood of the cart. The cows were slaughtered and offered to God as a burnt offering. The five lords of the Philistines were watching from a distance. When they see the Levites caring for the ark, the articles, gold, and see the burnt offerings and sacrifices, they turn around, go back to Ekron. They've got their answer. It was the God of Israel who had punished the Philistines for having taken the Ark of the Covenant. Verses 17 and 18 repeat that the golden tumors and golden mice represented the five cities of the Philistine lords and were a guilt offering. Verse 4. And the large stone became a type of national monument, I think, a witness to the day that the ark came home to Israel. What would you like to say through verse 18? I don't remember reading that they had calves. I said they had cows that had never worked before, so they had never had a yoke on them. But perhaps being young cows, they might have wanted to return to their herd. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Absolutely. Good point. Thank you. Kind of gives you an indication of the mindset of the people of the day. Anyone else? Good thoughts.
See that later on with the miracles too. long as you're not trying to turn back from the world or trying to add or take away, you're going to get to heaven with God.
Interesting point. As you look at the next verses, let's see where we are. In verse 19, in the excitement over the return of the ark, the men of Beth-Shemesh did something that was not prudent. They looked into the ark. Now, their motives may have been innocent. They probably wished to see if the Philistines had done anything to the ark. Nevertheless, in Numbers 4, the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron about the duties of the priest and those that worked with the ark, and saying in verse 20 about the most holy object, they shall not go in to see the holy objects even for a moment, or they will die. Now in verse 19, we see God struck down 50,070 men. I'm aware that some translations, the Revised Standard and English Standard use 70, while the New American Standard, New King James, and the King James stay with the Septuagint translation or version and say 50,070. I don't have an answer for that. Josephus used 70. Regardless of the number, God struck down those who did the wrong thing. The men left in Beth-Shemesh said, "Who is able to stand before the Lord, this holy God, and to whom shall he go up from us?" So they sent the messengers to the inhabitants of Kiriath-Jearim, saying, "The Philistines have brought back the ark of the Lord. Come down and take it to you." You know, Kiriath-Jearim, that name, was probably the nearest town they could send it to. And they wanted it out of their reach. It was the nearest largest town, certainly in the area, as you can see there, not too far away from where Beth-Shemesh is, just a little bit away. And each of these towns that had the ark wanted it gone. But once it reached Beth-Shemesh, we're going to see in the 7th chapter, it stayed there. Once it reached Kiriath-Jearim, it stayed there 20 years. Any comments? Then we'll stop here. And probably on Sunday and Wednesday of next week, we will look at the 7th through the 12th chapters. That will be a generality. Thank you. And thank you, Kenny, for your comments. And